Masks will, of course, be required. For your audio program guide, tune in to the Montreal Sessions, Tuesday, May 24th, May 31st, and June 7 and 14th, from 3 till 5 p.m. The Swanee crew hosts will be serving up highlights of what to expect at this year's festival. This is, of course, a CKUT co-presentation.
What's up, what's up, what's up, good people? To those of you listening wherever, whenever, whatever time it is, good morning, good evening, and good night. You are locked into another Tuesday evening with Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 FM. Soul P has been on the air since 1994. We bring you all the topics, the guests, the ups and downs, the highs and the lows of the black community here in Montreal, across Canada, and internationally. We have a beautiful evening of music and discussion lined up for you tonight. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives right here on CKUT 90.3 on your FM dial.
I will be one of the greatest, that is a vow, yeah, that is a promise. Always wanted to be famous, just being real, yeah, just being honest. My haters won't always be nameless, give them no clout, I give them no power. Creators built different, they ancient, sooner than later, all will be ours. I keep an eye out for the numbers, I stay in contact, synchronization. To infinity, even beyond it, I am a common, no destination. A lot of things I am above, and there are a lot of things that are above me. Do not come for the people I love, cause then I get scary, then I get uglier. Ain't no problem when I'm the equation. Presence, loaded, observation. I'm not new here, reborn creation.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and tonight it is the final episode of our celebration of Black Mothers for the month of May. Happy Mother's Day to our Haitian mothers out there who celebrated this past Sunday, because, of course, like I've said before in previous shows, Haitian mothers do celebrate on the last Sunday of May. Tonight's final guest for this evening is very dear to me. Her name is Nadine Dominique. She is a Haitian-born activist and permaculturist who is building a community-led project that will revitalize traditional food-growing systems and drive a renaissance of Haiti's ancient forests. Setting down roots in the hills of Cap Rouge and overlooking the Caribbean Sea, Jardin Lacou Aubec is already a hive of environmental activity. Sustainability is their ultimate goal. They are concentrating on trees on the verge of extinction, first by introducing the Mayan nut locally called chocogou, due to its taste and nicknamed the money tree, because the nut, after 10 days in the sun, can survive in a mill for up to 5 years. Nadine has worked in Radio Haïti Inter as the program director in the 90s, right up to the assassination of her father, after she returned to Montreal to gather international solidarity for the Justice for Jean and Jean-Claude Louis Saint-Campagne that aimed to put pressure on the Haitian justice system for a trial of the case. Until today, 22 years after the murders, justice has yet to be served. When the campaign stopped, she worked at the newly formed African-Canadian Development and Prevention Network at the Côte des Neiges Black Community Association. One of her many, many titles, she has done many, many things over the years, but the title that she holds today is, she's my mom. So, Mom, thank you so much for being here this evening. I'm so excited to finally have you on the air and get to talk with you.
It's a pleasure for me to be here. We just celebrated Mother's Day yesterday, so it was great.
Yeah, yeah. On Sunday, you mean?
Oh, yes, on Sunday.
How are you doing? How has this time, this pandemic-y time, been for you?
Well, Haiti was not hit as hard as everywhere else in the north. So here, I'm quite secluded up in my mountain, and we don't have much access to a lot of people and a lot of gatherings. People wore masks here and there.
Yeah.
The hardest thing for us is it was the fact that we don't have many visitors from abroad at the farm.
Right.
Because since the pandemic, the back and forth is really reduced. And I don't really want to talk about it, but there's also a lot of violence on the road that reaches to my hill.
Right.
Coming up Port-au-Prince. So it's difficult for other people to reach up the hill. But apart from that, here it's been quite active. We still do the same work that we used to do. We have a great nursery and we distribute trees around. This is going very well. It hasn't stopped. The pandemic really didn't stop us from working.
That's amazing, because a lot of people really had to stop everything that they were doing over here. Unless you were a quote-unquote essential worker, life came to a halt almost completely. So it's good to know that that you were able to continue working. I mean, and I'm guessing that because you're working in permaculture, that, you know, there's almost an auto-sustainability in that you don't need to travel as much to go get the essentials. You might need specifics that you can't produce on the farm, but you won't have to get, like, the essentials, right?
Every couple of weeks, we still have to go downtown to the market.
Right.
And it's bustling with activity. It never really stopped. People wear masks here and there.
Right.
But, you know, the activity at the market is the same way, because we're quite isolated from the big city.
Right.
And the peasants never stopped working, right?
Right.
They still do their crops, they still go sell their crops to the mountain market, and they still go downtown to continue selling whatever they have.
And by peasants, you mean farmers, right?
Farmers, yes.
Yeah.
Farmers. Yes, the farmers still continue planting and distributing their stuff. The only difficulty we have is the trucks coming from Port-au-Prince to carry stuff to Port-au-Prince don't really travel because of the condition of the bandits on the road.
Right, right. Okay, well, we're here to talk about mothers and black mothers and all that good stuff. So my first question for you is, what does motherhood mean to you?
Well, it's the greatest gift that I've had for real in my life, you know, for me to be able to raise a child, to have a child, because I had difficulty, you know, I'll talk about that after. But it was exhilarating for us, because your father and I, we followed the pregnancy through photography a lot.
Yeah.
And it was like, so exciting, because I never planned to have a child. I didn't think about motherhood before, because my only concern was like changing Haiti or changing the world and being active in the political spectrum to change the world. So it was a surprise. It was like, wow. And it was a change, and it's like I had a stupid smile on my face during my whole pregnancy. I didn't have any of the normal problems the difficulties that women have sometimes, not digesting well. My pregnancy was a charm.
Wow.
And yes, it was really a charm. And my hair was growing a lot, and my skin was glowing, and your father was right there with me all the time, and he used to even tell me that I laugh in my dreams. Mm-hmm. So it was a very, very happy time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So motherhood for me is like to be able to have that little creature in your arms, and that you're gonna be responsible for them, for him, for all of my life. And for me, it was really exhilarating, and it was exciting, and it was fun, because my baby was not a crying baby. My baby was a happy baby. He didn't give problems. And since I had a cesarean, your father was always the one to pick him up at night and bring him to me for the breastfeeding. And he was very solidaire. He cooked for me. He took care of the house for me, because you have to rest for about 3 months after the cesarean. Don't do any kind of heavy work.
Yeah.
So he was the one bathing with the baby. And it was a partnership. It was a real partnership.
Wow.
And we enjoyed that time very, very much.
Wow. You mentioned just a while ago that you had a difficulty. Would you care to elaborate on that?
Yes. When I started to be active, like around 18, 19, mm-hmm. I went to be a gynecologist, mm-hmm. a white man.
Okay.
And unfortunately for me, he put an intrauterus device, which is what we call an IUD.
Yeah.
And you're supposed to put an IUD into a mature uterus.
Okay.
And it gave me an infection, a really bad infection. And what I learned, like a few years ago, is that I have a skeleton of a 15-year-old.
Wow.
So he didn't have no business putting an IUD inside of such a small body, right? And an unmature uterus. So I had a terrible infection. I had to be rushed to the hospital to have it taken away. And when I came back after the intervention, the doctors told me, you have 99% of chances of getting pregnant, because it really messed up your fallopian tubes.
Wait, you had how much percentage?
99%.
So 99% of your chance was taken away?
Exactly.
Okay, because so you had like a 1% chance of getting pregnant?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. My fallopian tubes were really damaged.
Okay.
And so, in my mind, I was like, never gonna have a baby, so was it.
Yeah, you just kind of had to resign yourself and accept it.
Yes, yes.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it wasn't traumatic, because it wasn't traumatic in the sense that motherhood was not something that I really sat down and thought about it.
Right.
You know? And I took it, okay, c'est la vie, that's the way it goes. I'm not supposed to have children.
Right.
When I met your father, like I was 21, 22,
mm-hmm.
and got pregnant, I was like, what? I'm not supposed to. What is this? What is going on? Because, during our time, there wasn't any AIDS. There wasn't any really diseases like that. And since the doctors took out the IUV, I never used contraceptive, because I knew I couldn't get pregnant.
Exactly.
But that man comes around. And I guess you were ready to come.
Right.
So we went to see my gynecologist. I had changed gynecologist, so of course I didn't want to have a man taking care of me anymore.
Right.
So I was that wonderful Haitian doctor.
Okay.
And And we went to see her and told her, look, man, that's not supposed to happen. You remember what happened to me? She says, well, that child must be ready to come.
Right, right.
So we decided to keep you and to take the chance of having a wonderful baby.
Yeah. That is amazing because I speak to, I do interviews, I do regular shows on Instagram Live, and a few weeks ago we talked about motherhood, and I said, I was talking about the fact that, you know, people always think about the science behind, behind like having children, and like the financial aspect of having children, and their responsibility from that point of view, but they never speak about the spiritual aspect of like motherhood and fatherhood and becoming a parent. It's like, you know, circumstances can come about whereby, you know, the child just comes, and, you know, while everyone, you know, well, the autonomy of a woman's body, it's a woman's right to choose whether or not to have a child, but the unexpectedness of a child coming into this world when you find someone that you care about and, like, that child is coming. People don't, I'm rambling, but people don't think about the spiritual aspect of it. And I find that to be concerning a bit.
Yes, but you know me, right?
Right.
For me, it's children that choose their parents.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And my gynecologist, she had the same vision too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, she says, well, if that child chose you to come, I mean, and you couldn't conceive because of your past experience with the IUV, well, take the chance and have a child.
Yeah.
So it was like, okay, he chose us. Well, we're going to do the job, and we're going to be there together, and we're going to raise him.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, and if, of course, my whole family was like, what? You're pregnant? How? I say, well, you know, it didn't come through my ears, that's for sure.
Oh, you know? Lord. For those folks that don't know, she's referring to that very very Christian metaphorical way that Jesus was born, where they said like an angel implanted Jesus through Mary's air. So it wasn't immaculate conception.
No, it wasn't. It wasn't. So yeah. So for me, it was always your choice to come to my body, you know, and to come to us.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I used it a few times when you got angry or upset. I would say, well, it's your choice, you know. You chose me, so you have to make do with me. I think I used that a few times with you.
It's possible. It's possible.
You don't remember, but no. I think I did.
Yeah. Just in case you're tuning in for the first time, we are speaking to my mother, Nadine Dominique, as a way to close. I thought this was the perfect closure of our celebration of Black Mothers for the entire month of May. We do have to take a quick break and play some music, pay some bills. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
Just don't, but a show that
let you know she is worth your time. You will lose if you choose to refuse to put her first. She will if she can find a man who knows her worth. Cause a real man knows a real woman when he sees her.
Black Rose Books invites you to our book launch event,
Confronting Canada's Past and Europe's Forgotten Revolutions,
happening on Sunday, May 22nd, featuring the authors and editors of
Stand on Guard for Whom,
The Fire That Time,
Insatiable Hunger,
The Forgotten Revolution,
and Black Ukraine Yesterday and Today.
Join us on live stream or in person at 2 p.m.
at the Cité des Hospitalières, 251 Pine West. Corner Park.
Free tickets are available at blackroselaunch.eventbrite.ca or visit blackrosebooks.com for more information.
This event is co-presented with the Cité des Hospitaliers en Transition and CKUT-FM.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and we are back for the final, final episode celebrating Black Mothers in May, for the entire month of May, for all of the shows that Soul P is doing. And we have special, special person on the air with us, my mother. Her name is Nadine Dominique, She came to Montreal as a young woman, I believe early teens, late tweens, and grew up here, returned to Haiti in the 90s, and became an activist, a radio host, among many other things, up until the assassination of her father, Jean-Dominique, after which she returned to Montreal to gather international solidarity for the Justice pour Jean and Jean-Claude Loïcin campaign that aimed to put pressure on the Haitian justice system for a trial on the case. She is also, again, my mama of a big, hostering 40-odd-year-old man, and talking to us tonight about motherhood. Thank you so much for being here, Mom. I'm so grateful for all of the conversations that we've been able to have.
I'm just grinning from ear to ear because I've never thought I would be talking on the radio about us and motherhood.
So I have a unique name. I always wondered, what was the thought process between you and my dad when you were choosing my name?
Well, me being Haitian and not liking people reducing somebody's name, like, you know, they call me Nad, it's okay, I got used to it. I'm old enough and I got used to it. But I didn't want to have a name that they would reduce, because for me, a name is your identity.
Right.
So Peter and I, we agreed on that. So we're gonna find a name that nobody can reduce, and that, you know, I don't want people to call you like a JD or something like that. I didn't want something like that. So mm-hmm. I wanted you to stick, and I want you to, you wanted your name to, and it, Peter agreed with me on all of that. And I think we were watching a movie and I saw the name Kim, and I said, well, Kim, it's an Asian name. It's used in Asia. It's a lot of, it's a last name too, you know,
right,
in Asia. So I decided, well, we're going to call our baby Kim. And I was so sure, you're not going to like that. I was so sure that I was going to have a girl.
Yep.
So Kim was a perfect name for a girl. So we decided on Kim.
Right.
And when you came out, you were a boy, because we never wanted to see you. We never wanted to see you were a boy. So Peter said, shit, man, what are we going to do, Nadine? His name is King. I said, well, he has a dick. We're just going to ask him. I don't know why.
Oh, my God. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So we're just going to change the I for a Y. And that was it. Your name is KYM. Your name is Kim. So that's how we chose the name.
Gotcha. And also my last name is a hyphenation of your last name and my father's last name. What was was there a thought process behind that?
Well, my mother and father had only girls.
Right.
Right? You were the first boy of the family.
Mm.
And it was like, the name has to perpetuate. The Dominic name has to go on.
Yeah.
I don't want the Dominic name to die with me or my sisters, because I just wanted the name to continue.
Mm-hmm.
So we decided, and Quebec allowed us at that time to have both parents' name.
Right.
So Peter agreed with me. Your father was very good, you know. He agreed with me that, okay, then we're going to use the last name Dominic Ferguson, and he will do whatever he wants with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how it is. Because after you and my sisters got sons after,
mm-hmm.
and yeah, they used the name too, but like Nicolas has the name in his prénom, or you say that in his
name? In his first name?
And Patrice is Fouché because, you know, she's from the second husband of my mother.
Yeah.
But the name can still go on now.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because, like, one... Well, I'm glad to know the intention behind it because it could almost be seen as, like, as a feminist kind of move, you know, because... It is not often that it's almost a given that the father's name is the child's name, you know? And then the hyphenating of the two, it's almost like, you know, F the patriarchy type of deal. But that wasn't the intention back then.
No, that was not the intention. The intention was to continue my name, and my name is Dominique.
Right.
And I didn't want that name to just disappear out of history.
Yeah.
I wasn't attacking the patriarchy. Fuck the patriarchy for sure, but still, you know?
Yeah.
It was just the intention that I wanted my name to continue.
Nice. And you had mentioned that you didn't want to know... Like, you didn't want to have, like, a gender reveal type of situation. Why was that?
I wanted the surprise. But I was so sure that I was going to have a girl, I guess, you know. And I wanted the surprise. We never really wanted to know.
Mm-hmm.
When we did the ultrasound, it was always like, does he have all his hands? Does he have his feet and his toes?
Yeah.
Does the baby's heart beating well? So that was really the only concern we had. We just wanted the surprise and see whatever the baby decided to choose.
Yeah. And then what happened? What happened when I was born?
Well, like I told you, I learned a few years ago that my bone structure is very small.
Right.
And Peter and I had done all the normal, like, the back on the South Coast, no, Kim.
The, you know, classes, all the birthing classes?
Yes, we had done all of that, the birthing and the breathing and all of that. We had done all of that. But when I got to the hospital and my doctor arrived, she realized that I wasn't dilating properly.
Right.
And she says the umbilical cord was around your neck three times.
Wow.
So she says it's better if we cut you open.
Mm.
We do a cesarean and take out the baby. I close my legs and I go, oh, wait, there's no way. I'm not getting cut. We did all the preparation for that. To have a natural birth, I am not doing it. So I close my head and my legs and I said, no way. She had to really soothe me and talk to me and say, you don't want to lose that baby.
Yeah.
If you don't want to lose that baby, you're going to have to do it because your bones are not opening and the cord is around the baby's neck. So you're going to have to go through that. And I wanted to be awake to see the baby when I was just having it.
Yeah.
And, you know, giving me they put me to sleep, basically.
Yeah.
Put me to sleep. I didn't want that. I really wanted to be awake and watching you coming out and everything.
Yeah.
They put me to sleep, what can I say?
Yeah.
So your father was the first one that saw you, actually. And it's when I woke up that I... You know?
That you what? Sorry, you tipped out.
When I woke up after the anesthesia,
mm-hmm.
that I saw you.
Mm.
You know? Yeah.
And what was that like when you saw me for the first time?
You were so beautiful. You were so beautiful because you didn't force coming out. So your little head was all round and you were all peaceful. You were on your father's chest when I saw you the first time. So it's like, wow, what a pretty baby, you know. And my mother would say, I don't know how the hell you had such a pretty baby, because your head is so big. Peter's head is so big, man. That baby should have been like... His head should have been deformed or something.
Oh, God. My grandmother just had no chills. She just said what was on her mind.
Yes, all the time.
Oh, my goodness.
But you were really a pretty baby, really, because you didn't suffer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you basically didn't suffer coming out.
Right.
So you were smooth, you were nice, and you were quiet, and you didn't cry much. You were just lying there on Peter's chest.
Mm-hmm.
So it was really exciting. What was difficult is that usually in hospitals, they don't allow cesarean mothers to breastfeed, really.
Right.
And the first 24 hours, they gave you the bottle.
Okay.
And I was crying because I wanted you to be breastfed. I know all the benefits of breastfeeding, right?
Yeah.
So I was crying and I wanted you to, but you didn't want to take the nipple because it was so easy to suck on the bottle.
Right.
And there's a Haitian nurse that passed through my door and saw me crying, trying to breastfeed you. And she said, what? He doesn't want to take the breast? Let me show you. So she just took your head, opened your mouth, stick the breast in your mouth and hold it there. And you started to suck.
Yeah.
Thanks to her, I was able to breastfeed.
Yeah. Because sometimes, well, I kind of have to assume, I figure that sometimes people are so delicate with babies, they forget how durable babies can be. And
yes.
And like sometimes you just need to give a little bit of not encouragement, but you need to be a little bit more firm, you know?
Yes.
Because it's like,
yes.
Oh, you can take the breast.
Of course.
Yeah, it's not.
And you did.
Yeah.
And I was so pleased and I was so thankful for her to do that, because all the other nurses were telling me, well, give him the bottle. And I said, no, I want him to take my breast. And my breasts were hard and full, and I wanted to take my breast.
Right. Mm-hmm. You wanted me to have the best benefits possible.
Mm-hmm. Of course, because, you know, it's a protection for the child.
Yeah. Yeah.
The breast is the miracle, you know?
Yeah, it's builds up the immune system and has a lot of other benefits as well.
Of course.
Yeah.
Especially the first milk that comes out.
Mm-hmm.
It's very, very strong. They call it colostrum, I think. Yeah.
They call it what?
Colostrum, in French, of course.
Okay.
It's the first milk is like thicker and has more energy and is much better. You have to take it.
Wow. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. My next question for you is, how does blackness affect the way that you saw bringing a child into the world back in 1980 and versus today? Right.
I didn't really question myself about our blackness, because it's just a fact. Who don't like it can go suck on a dinosaur egg, you know? it's just the way it is. It's a fact. And it is so ingrained in us Haitians and Jamaicans that we are black no matter our color.
Yeah.
No matter our skin color. So that wasn't really a problem. I didn't question that, really.
Mm-hmm.
I really didn't question that.
And has your perception changed from 1980 to now?
I wouldn't have children now.
Wow.
I wouldn't have children now. Now it's too difficult. Now the streets are dangerous. Now... we are ostracized, and it wasn't the same thing in the 80s, you know.
Okay.
In the 80s, we're just like, because I grew up in Montreal, right? I went to Montreal when I was 9 years old.
Right.
And being a black girl going to primary school, and, you know, the kids would touch my hair, and, some even would bring, like, a garbage bag full of clothes because they thought we were refugees, right?
Right.
And just drop it in front of my house, in my of my apartment.
Yeah.
So that's why I cut my hair, actually, because I was tired of people touching my hair and wanting to touch my hair. So I said, Mom, that's it, man. I don't want that hair anymore. We're just going to cut it short.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, that is one of the reasons why I didn't want to have long hair. I had long braids when I was young, and everybody was after my hair. Mm-hmm. And I couldn't stand that. But right now, if I was in my 20s, I don't think I would have children, because I see the mothers over there now, like their heart is in their mouths all the time when the children are on the streets,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, the violence against black people, the violence against indigenous people. No, I wouldn't make the choice. Well, I didn't make the choice. You chose. But still, you know,
yeah,
I would choice now to have children, because it's too difficult, because you have to have some strange talks with them about police, about being careful, about this and that. It must be traumatizing now to raise children in North America.
Wow. Why do you think that it's more difficult now? Because, like, one would think that there would be less racism now versus back in the 80s.
Well, what I realize now is that the capitalist, imperialistic, white supremacist still system is falling apart.
Right.
And when a lion is maimed, mm-hmm. that's when he's more dangerous.
I was about to say, when an animal is cornered, or when they're wounded, that is when they're the most volatile.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So it's not the same situation as before, right. For real.
Right. Yeah. And also, like, with the advent of the internet, you can spread hatred faster than wildfire, right? Like good news only... I was listening to an old interview that I did on Hip Hop Cafe, and we were talking about audience members, and if your audience is dissatisfied, they will talk to 10 people and tell 10 people, you know, this was a horrible show, versus if they're happy with it, they'll talk to one person about it. Bad news spreads way faster than good news does. So, you know, I can imagine that, especially now with the internet, everything that is terrible that is happening spreads way, way faster than anything that is positive.
Yep, yep. And also, what I think too is that the systems, like the powers that are in power,
mm-hmm.
are using the diviser pour régner, you know?
Right, divide and conquer.
Yeah. Yes, divide and conquer. And it's like every day, you know, every day. And it's like, because of the internet, because of the access that everybody have to everything, the propaganda is very, very strong to divide and conquer.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting. Just in case you're tuning in for the very first time, we are speaking to my mama, Nadine Dominique, and we are concluding this evening the celebration of Black Mothers for the month of May. And we do have to take a quick break, pay some bills, play some music. Keep it locked. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM.
FM.
Even so, Tande yon lot rel, anou li men yon chandel. L'humanité saigne, yon lot femme fotil nan fiel. Diel, tout pas tout planète pédi la canciel. Haïti ak Chili, Japon veye tout l'âme. Nan te ane kile, personne, pas que pour personne. La vie tourne yon marathon, tout moun vle champion. Compétition, fait n'blie, sen gen yon conscience, prends patience. Materialis, superficialis. S'autodestruction, poison pour yon nation, coup de passion. Nous toujours ferme, nan yon tension. Focus rationnel, fait n'blie, problème réel. Nous besoin manger, éducation, à soins de santé. Voxambou.co, c'est ton petit monde d'un coup. Nous déjà connaît refrain, la misère, pas tout. Haute l'amour, ok, Joe, gagnant qu'un humble. Bye, n'amour, pour qu'à prendre avantage sous nous.
Yes, 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 we're back, we're back, we're back. You are listening to Soul Perspectives here on CKUT 90.3 FM. My name is Kim Dominique Ferguson, and this is our final show for our dedication celebration of Black Mothers in the month of May. Since the beginning of the month, every Tuesday we have been talking to different mothers of different backgrounds. So we had a brand new mother who just had a baby in January. We had a grandmother who is the grandmother of six beautiful children. We had a mother of two grown teenage kids. Then we had my stepmother. And now for the final show, we have my mother, which I think is the perfect closing. You know, we have one that's brand new and the one that raised me, your host. So my mom is Nadine Dominique, and she is a Haitian-born activist and permaculturist, and just has been giving so much knowledge and so much information about my life that I didn't even realize that was there. Mom, thank you so much for being here this evening with us. It's been a really enlightening conversation, and I'm just very happy that we're having it.
Me too. There's things you didn't even know.
No, there's a lot that we don't know. I find that we take for granted that we know our parents and that even our parents know us. But the truth is that we don't spend as much time as we think we do.
Yeah.
And we also don't talk about everything that happens to us. You know, so there's always more to learn about the people that we love and care for. So I always, when it comes to the social media, I always say that I was raised by two mothers and one father. So that means that eventually yours and my father's partnership ended up dissolving.
Yes.
And I wanted to know, because what happened with me, I find, is very unique. Because you decided that I, as a boy, should grow up with my father.
Excuse me.
Sorry?
You decided.
Okay. All right. So what was the thought process then when you guys were broken up?
Well, we were living in Jamaica, and when we decided to break up, right, I came back to Montreal with you.
Yeah.
And after a couple of years, you looked at me and said, I want to live with my father.
Wow.
Yeah. But I believe in the back of your little head, you thought that telling me you want to go back living with your father was the move you wanted to make to try to bring us back together.
Oh.
Yeah, Peter and I thought the same thing. And Peter was already with Paula.
Right.
He was living with Paula. They were doing their business together. So I called Peter and says, your son wants to come home to you.
Mm-hmm.
So he said, well, ship him to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I packed up your stuff. I gave you your little backpack. I put you on a plane. And a hostess took care of you until you reached Jamaica.
Wow.
For me, being from a three mother thing. Like, I had my mom.
Right.
My father married a second time.
Yeah.
And he married a third time, Michelle.
Yeah.
So I had three moms.
Yeah.
And I had two fathers.
Mm-hmm.
My mother remarried, and I had my little sister. So for me, it was like, well, he's going to have another mother.
Okay.
So it was really not a problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
It was really a problem. When you got to Jamaica, every week, I think I would write to you to make sure I kept the link.
Yeah.
Even if we didn't see each other every day, I would tell you my whole life.
Yeah.
In letter, all the time. And every time I called or Peter called, Paula and I always spoke together.
Mm-hmm.
It was extremely important for me because I was raised in a multi-parent family too.
Right.
To keep the link between us. Because there's things that I know about you that she might not know about you. If she have problems with you, she could call me. So we became friends, basically.
Yeah.
And we always kept in touch. I even went into business with them.
Right, right.
Yeah, yeah. So I was obsessed with coming back to Haiti.
Right.
That was the first reason, right? Haiti, and I'm really glad we did, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And Paula would call me anytime if she had a problem with you. I remember once she called me and she says, "What's wrong with your son?" I said, What do you mean, what's wrong with your son? She says, "Well, every time she goes shopping with him, he carries his dictionary." I say, "What?" Yes, he carries his dictionary. And she says, "Every time I pick up something in a tin, he looks at the ingredients and he would say, 'Oops, my mother told me not to eat anything that I can't pronounce because it's not for me.'" So it was very funny. It was very funny, you know, because I thought, you know, these things didn't get into your head that, you know, you have to eat organic and you have to eat the right food and you have to be careful about chemicals in your system because they're not good for you.
Right.
So, but I didn't think that you had, like, registered that so much that you would carry a dictionary to a supermarket to make sure that what Paula buys is good for you.
Right.
So, yes, it was a very interesting relationship that we had during that time when you were growing up.
Right. What were some of the things that you learned about yourself during that process of raising your son almost at distance? Because you only saw me during, like, the holidays, right? Like,
yeah.
Christmas and, I believe, at least a part of the summer.
Yes, yes. Since we talked so often, I knew what was going on in your life because I made sure, and Peter made sure, we really kept a close link.
Yeah.
You know? What was... You see, what was my thought process? You see, Peter and I, we had the same vision, mm-hmm. of how to raise a child.
Right.
Right? And I believe he kept the basic values that we had shared.
Yeah.
And he kept them with you, and he was teaching you the same way that I would be teaching you. I remember the first time I slapped you.
Mm-hmm.
In Jamaica when you were about maybe 3 or 4,
mm-hmm.
you were really like not wanting this and not wanting that. And Peter tell me, "Look, man, if you slap the kid on his bum, you know, you're not going to traumatize him. So because you have to make sure he knows you're the parent and he's the child."
Right.
So I knew Peter would raise you the same way that we had decided. He was the one really that was, he could only look at you and you straighten up yourself kind of thing. Yeah. But me, I was a little softy. Oh, can I slap him? Can I really slap him? He says, just a slap on the bum is nothing, Nadine, you know. It's just going to wake him up.
Yeah.
And make him do the right thing.
Mm.
So I didn't have any problem. And Paula was, she wasn't, you know, she wasn't, like, she wasn't in contradiction with the way we were raising you. She wasn't in contradiction. So, yeah.
Yeah, one of the things that she told me is that she did not want to interfere with however I was being raised. She just, whatever my father wanted, that's in terms of raising me. And then she would tell me that sometimes she would talk to my dad and be like, I think maybe you're being a little bit too hard on him. Maybe, you know, like sometimes she would comment, and mm-hmm. and then of course the final decision always rested with my father, but excuse me, she always made a point to like not interfere with how I was being raised, like,
yeah.
And what were some of the values that that you and my dad had kind of agreed upon, if you can remember?
Yes, respect. Respect was extremely important because in Quebec, when we were living in Quebec, we realized that the Quebecers raised their children and allowed them everything.
Yeah.
Like everything. And for us, it wasn't the good way to raise people, because children have to have boundaries.
Right.
Right. Children have to know that when you say it's time for bed, it's time for bed.
Yeah.
You know, when it's time to turn off the damn TV, it's time to turn off the TV.
Yeah.
And when it's time to eat, you're going to wash your hands, you're going to sit down, and you're going to eat.
Mm.
And no matter what we put in front of you, you have to eat, because this is what dinner is tonight.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
The value, the most important thing was really respect. Respect to you and respect to us. Respect to older people, respect to people.
Yeah.
You know? And you have to have your time alone too, which means your time that you take your books, that you read, that you color, that you play with your things, that you're not like forcibly interacting with us all the time. So that was very important too.
So you guys wanted to make sure that I had my independence.
Yes.
And that I earned my independence very young.
Yes. It's very, very important. It was very important to us. And it was like a natural way too. We didn't have like a lot of discussion about it. That was just the way it was. You know? We made decision. You always had your backpack.
Yeah.
Wherever we are going, you always carried your backpack.
Yeah.
It had a book, coloring books, and we made sure that lecture and music was part of your life.
You know, I feel like the independence thing backfired a little bit on my father, because I remember back when I had moved back to Jamaica, because the audience, the listeners wouldn't know, but there was a time when I was living in Jamaica, and then there was a time when I moved to Haiti for about 3 years, and then I moved back to Jamaica for high school. And, well, I was already in high school in Haiti, but then I moved back to Jamaica. And I remember that when I moved back to Jamaica, my parents, their businesses were really starting to take off. Like, dad was, like, pulling late hours. My stepmother, mom, was, she was, like, working on her own business, and that had picked up. So they were both busy, busy, busy entrepreneurs. So coming to pick me up at 3 o'clock when school was finished was kind of disrupting a part of their day. So oftentimes I would have to like get a ride from friends, or I'd have to, not oftentimes, but frequently enough, that I kind of was like, after a few times of like waiting for my dad and him coming to pick me up at like 5:30 and me being one of the last people at school to be picked up, I started walking home from just not walking home, but walking to my dad's office from school, because I didn't know the bus system at the time. And then after that, like, sometimes we'd be at the office until 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock at night, and then getting home at 9 o'clock to go and do homework wasn't always, you know, the most viable thing. So I would make my way to the office, and then after a certain time, I think about 4 or 5 o'clock, I'd look at my dad and be like, listen, I'm gone home. I'm going to take the bus home. And I remember, my father being in complete shock, because this wasn't something that he was used to, you know, and then I reached home. I called them to let them know that I got home safely, and I made some food, bathed, did my homework. And when they got home, they got home. So the independence almost kind of, not really backfired, but it was like, well, I'm realizing that this was an instillment from very young. Like, this was part of my values. And I find it so interesting that you say that the value that you wanted to instill was respect. Because up till now, respect is such a huge part of my life. If someone doesn't respect me, it's a no-go for me.
Yes, I can understand that. I can understand that. Because right now, in North America too, you know, mm-hmm.